This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Fuck yeah.
No, nice.
No. I meant, heck yes. I was going to try to not swear a whole lot for my mother so she could listen to an episode for once.
Well, Mrs. Snore, this one ain't the first one, so don't worry about that. Guys, welcome to the Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader, and before we get into it with my man, the returning champion, Magellan, Ben Snore's back. We have to talk about our meeting and our adventures and everything like that. Let's take care of a little bit of business. First things first, I want to thank my friends at Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This grinder is awesome, and they have a special coming up for Black Friday, so definitely check out all their discounts on the Black Friday special, where during the Black Friday special, I don't have it in front of me. I'll have it next week because next week's going to be Black Friday. I'll have it all then, but they're going to have a special discount on everything. They're giving away grinder parts and all that, and everything's going to be discounted. And Knife Talk 10 will not be available during the Black Friday sale. But definitely check out what's going on over at BroadbeckIronworks.com. I love their grinders, period. Done. End of sentence. Something more to say. Their stuff is great and their deals are awesome, and Ben and Ryan and Vince are terrific, so many thanks to them. I want to thank my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next heat treat oven, go to evenheat-hillen.com. It doesn't get much better than Even Heat. We just finished, we heat treated some knives, we tempered some knives, and then I also stabilized some wood in my heat treating oven, and I had a problem. When you're using high temperature steels all the time for a long time, we do a lot of heat treating. Sometimes your thermocoupler goes out. I go on the website, bingo, bango, bongo, a new thermocoupler's on the way. It came right in, came right out, easy. The customer service is awesome. Their part, they have accessories and parts. They're so helpful. I love my Even Heat, and that's it, period. End of sentence. There's nothing better to say than that. So I want to thank my friends at evenheat-killen.com. You should definitely check out what's going on with them. If you're getting it hard, you got to use an Even Heat. Next are my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. I got something special to say about Maritime Knife Supply. Not only are your knife making needs met with the belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, anvils, and so much more, but they also have a special going on right now. Not a special, but something special. So Lawrence Lake and Maritime Knife Supply has a scholarship with the New England School of Metalwork. It's the ABS Intro to Bladesmithing Scholarship, open from ages 16 to 30. Applications are open until December 1st, and the applications are to be filled out at the New England School of Metalwork's website. It's $2,000 American dollars that go towards class and accommodations. And this is great. Joyce Cuddy won it last year, and it really was really a great opportunity for her to take classes and have some of the burden taken away from it, the financial burden. So many thanks to Maritime Knife Supply. I mean, it just can't get much better than him. He just sent me some of them new Yellow Norton Razor Stars. I mean, their things are unbelievably great. And not only does he have all the stuff to get you squared away, but he has, he's doing great things like scholarships for the New England School of Metalwork. So definitely support, at the very least, support them at MaritimeKnifeSupply.com. And anytime we mention anything here or on Knife Talk, he has it. So especially that 1080 hex bar, don't sleep on that. He got all of it. I want to thank my friends at Trojan Horse Forge. Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stabilrail knife finishing vise. Sam and Jeff have done it again. Their vices are built in the heart of Texas, and they're meant to take these vices meant to take your handle finishing and knife making to a whole new level. You bolt on the tray, you bolt on the deck, and then you can hand sand your knives with these, or you can turn it around once you get the handle on, and you can work on your handle 360 degrees, and it got much better than that. And if you go to TrojanHorseForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you're going to get 10% off everything, including the T4 Sentinel Oil, the handle press attachment, all that stuff. These guys are great. They're making things in America, another American manufacturing company, and I'm really honored to be involved with Trojan Horse Forge. It would be a great gift if you're in the holiday mood. You want to get something, someone's going to feel good about. You get yourself one of them Trojan Horse Forge knife making devices, but it's going to come in one of them boxes. Somebody might think it's ordnance or something. So it's so bomb-proof, you never know. But definitely check it out. I love those guys. I want to thank my friends at Baker Forge and Tool. That's BakerForge.com. Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. It's Baker Forge, Koi, and the guys, you know. I'm going to have Koi on sooner rather than later. I hope so. They're the makers of this exotic steels, beautiful exotic steels like Tiger My, Bronze My, Copper My, all this stuff. And it is amazing. The most amazing part is the fact that they're making really easy-to-use exotic steels that you can do at home, that you can make beautiful knives with. They come annealed. They're easy to cut. You can use a torch. You probably could use a torch. I wouldn't use a torch if with a copper mine, but you could use a grinder. You can use your angle grinder and your saw and stuff like that. And then when it comes to heat treating it, heat treating, all the instructions are easy. And when it comes to etching it, definitely getting a hold of that gator piss. GATORPISS. Gator, short for alligator. Piss is short for urine. This stuff is pre-made ferric chloride and something. And it's amazing. I just actually did some Damasteel and I used it, and it was really, really great. This gator piss is the best and I love it. And the guys at Baker Forge are making very repeatable steels, bronze mice, copper mice, mosaic, Damascus, all that stuff. And the cores in the middle, without question, easy to work with. They give you a great runway to land your plane. So definitely go over to BakerForge.com, and then you can put in the promo code Full Blast, and you're going to get 10% off everything. And if you want to get some of that gator piss, a little special, go to Texas Ferry Supply. Our friends at Texas Ferry Supply have all the stuff you need for getting yourself squared away, all the blacksmithing stuff, all the bladesmithing stuff, all the farrier stuff, all the knife making. They have all that, including the rhino wet and all that. And if you go to TexasFarrierSupply.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, you're going to get 10% off everything. All my numbers, all the different things are in the show notes. So all the discount codes, all the stuff that you're going to ask me for, it's all there. So definitely check out Texas Ferrier Supply, and definitely get yourself involved with the Baker Forge steels. It's really, really great. I want to thank my friends at Total Boat, TOTALBOAT.com, TotalBoat.com, for all your adhesives, paints, primers, polishing compounds. I use their two-part epoxy for all the handle scales, and then I also use I use their Fathom Thick Set to make hybrid handle materials. I love that stuff. You don't need anything. You don't need tumblers. You don't need vibrators. You don't vibratory things. You don't need pressure pots. All that stuff. The stuff is awesome. If you go to totalboat.com/fullblast and you buy everything off of that link, you're gonna get a discount, and I'm gonna get street cred. So if it's good enough for Keith Decent, Derek from Malden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, and Jimmy Duresta, it's good enough for you. So go get yourself some of that Total Boat. Stop playing. I want to thank my friends at GL Hansen & Sons. That's G.L._Hansen & Sons on Instagram. They're the makers of G-Carta. So if you go to gcarta.bigcartel.com, you can get yourself some beautiful scales and with natural fibers, fabrics, and epoxy mixed with heat and pressure. Stuff is really, really great, and you're going to make yourself something real special, and you won't regret it. You won't regret it. You won't regret it. So go to gcarta.bigcartel.com, get yourself some Pheasant, Polarama, get yourself some Hoopla, get yourself some Bofa, Ripple Cut. Get yourself some Mahi Mahi Radio MG card, and you're wondering what all that's about. Well, go check out his Instagram page. You're going to see all the great colors and stuff like that. So definitely go get yourself some of that GL Hansen & Sons. Stop playing. And without any further ado, I want to thank my friends at Tormek, celebrating 50 plus years of being in business with the Black TH sharpening system. Their water cool sharpening system has made me a better knife maker, and it will keep your tool sharp. It will keep your knife sharp. It'll give your chisel sharp. Anything you need to get sharp. Get yourself a Tormek. I just talked to Victor, and we're going to have either Victor's going to come on or Sebastian. Sebastian's awesome, and we're going to get the Tormek guys back on for sure. So go to Tormek.com, check it out, and you can go to @Tormek_sharpening on Instagram. Well, I want to thank my sponsors, but I want to thank my buddy Ben Snoor, who I got to see in person, 2 weeks ago? Ben Snoor is... Last week, Ben is one of my good friends, and we had a great time. He came to visit. He surprised me, and we want to talk about your great Eastern Seaboard adventures. Ben Snoor, how the hell are you?
I'm good. I'm really glad to be home.
I bet you are.
Yeah.
You sent me a message a couple of weeks ago, and you said, will you be close to Fishkill next week? And I said, yeah, I'm really close to Fishkill. I'm about, like 30 minutes away or something like that. And he says, well, I might be in the area. And it, the cool thing was I had no idea why. Like, you're a busy guy. You run a ranch. You're an awesome hammer maker and blacksmith. And, you know, you got your stuff going on. And I'm thinking to myself, why the fuck would, or pardon me, why the heck would Ben Snoor be in Fishkill, New York, of all places?
That is a good question. And end up in Georgetown, Massachusetts.
Yeah. I originally assumed you were buying a piece of equipment. I figured he's going to pick, you're going to go, maybe you're going to head down to see Chris Cash. You're going to get yourself a power hammer. I thought that there was some exciting news, and I won't interrupt you again.
It was equipment, but it wasn't for me. And to me, it's not even very exciting. So last year, my buddy Jack Kraft, Johannes Gutenberg, decided he found this printing press that's called an Intaglio printing press. And if anybody's into printing, I guess you know what that is. And if you're not into printing, you're as ignorant as I am. And it's this massive 10,000-pound printing press. It was made, you know, in the early 1900s, and he just had to have it. And, you know, that he flew up to Boston, drove up to Georgetown, took a look at it, and it was for him. So he came back home, and he farted around for a while, and he built himself this trailer. And he didn't, he's a notorious tight ass, and so he didn't want to pay anybody to help move it. And as time got closer to go get this thing, he found some riggers to help him move it, but he didn't want to pay them to use their equipment. He just wanted the manpower, and they didn't want to do that, understandably. And so he showed up at my shop with some beers and proceeded to feed me quite a number of beers in a pretty short amount of time before saying, how would you feel about a trip, road trip to Georgetown, Massachusetts? And at that time, I was feeling good. And I was like, this is a great idea. My wife won't mind at all. And so I drank.
Did he think about the cost of having it shipped?
I tried to talk him into that, and he just didn't like the set. He didn't like that. He didn't trust anybody else to haul it for him. He didn't trust people to load it without him there. Because this thing, you know, it was a surprisingly flimsy cast iron base. I mean, it's cast iron, but it's only 3/8 to maybe 1/2 inch at the thickest on these legs. Which is, you know, just doesn't sound like a whole lot for 10,000 pounds of weight.
Right, and it doesn't. And it wasn't something that comes apart.
No, I mean, you might could have, but it would just be hellacious to do it because the way this press works is it's got this big flat bed, I guess you'd call it, big table,
yeah,
that rolls back and forth between these two rolls, and each of the rolls, the top, you know, weigh somewhere around a ton a piece, and then the table's, you know, another ton. And all of it together somehow. I actually asked the guy. I was like, this thing can't weigh 10,000 pounds. Like, I did a little bit of material calculation and or guessing. And I said, you know, it's just not that heavy. And he said, no, it's 8,500, but 10,000 sounds better.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So, yeah, he came up with this plan. He built this trailer. And he talked me, you know, kind of laid out the plan of how this thing was going to get moved. And it sounded better after him explaining it to me than I'd originally thought. And so I agreed to go. And my wife basically said, you know, this is kind of an opportunity to go see Jeff Fader, who is a celebrity in our household. The kids are just ecstatic that I got to meet you. And Jimmy DiResta. Cliff Dufton. I mean, it was just, and on top of all that, Jack just needed help. So, you know, a couple of days later, off we went.
So Intaglio, from what I took one printmaking class in college, and Intaglio is like you have steel or metal plates, and then you're carving into the metal plates, Or there are these, you're acid etching and you're photo etching. You can do photo etching and all this acid etching. So it's not like relief where you're like, carving out from a piece of wood and then just rolling it. It's like very, very thin metal that you need that weight for those to work. So it's a little bit, that heaviness comes because you need that, it's a production, frankly.
It sounds like a production from, what I've gathered.
So did he build the trailer from scratch?
He built the trailer from scratch.
Gotta be kidding me.
No.
That thing was huge.
It was huge. And it's ridiculously overbuilt, but it was going to be hauling a fair amount of weight. And, I think once he kind of got done with the trailer, he realized, I might could have just bought a trailer for a similar price.
It would have been cheaper for him to find a company to move it, him fly out and meet the company, and then come home.
It sure would have been a hell of a lot less ass ache. But he had a plan, he was going to stick with it, so that's what he did.
He's a very interesting guy. His artwork is unbelievable. He and I have talked a little bit online over the years. He listens to Knife Talk, yep. And I think he listens to this. And it really was, being able to see his artwork, it was pretty, he's very, very talented. So that was really cool. Yep. But it was amazing that he was able to build that trailer. I think that if I built a trailer from scratch, I would be concerned with riding it across country on its first trip.
It got a hell of a shakedown run.
Were there any issues with this thing?
Minor issues. So he built the trailer, all the frame, the tongue, all of that, and then he paid somebody else to wire it and to put the two 7,000-pound torsion axles underneath it, which was supposed to take like 3 weeks and ended up taking like 2.5 months. And he finally just had to get, call the guy and say, you need to hustle up or, I don't know, bad things are going to happen. I don't know what. But the guy basically just didn't inflate the tires, and we didn't discover that until, Oklahoma City maybe. The wiring, apparently some of the wiring had pulled out before we'd even left on the back end of the trailers. The wires for the taillights had gotten screwed up. But other than that, yeah, the whole thing worked good. And if you really took the time to look at it, his less than beautiful welds were very strong. I wasn't worried about it falling apart.
Yeah. You don't have to get any type of certification to go on a long trip like that. I guess not.
Well, he had to go get it registered, and that's just another just pain in the ass. You have to take it to the DMV. They have to inspect it to tell you built this and didn't steal it.
How do you prove that?
They look at Jack's trailer and like, nobody's going to steal this thing.
They looked at the welds and like, yeah, this thing sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then, it was an all day, maybe a 2 day thing to get a license plate for it. And at one point we were getting ready to just say, well, look, we'll take a license plate off of one of my trailers, stick it on there and let's just go. Cause who cares? But yeah, so we left out on a Thursday morning at 5 o'clock from my shop and drove all the way to Anderson, Indiana, home of Cole Ironworks.
Huh.
And that was
out of curiosity, yeah. when you guys worked this all out, did you have stipulations like we got to go here, we got to go here, we got to go here? Or?
A little bit. But he also, neither one of us wanted to just completely drive straight through. The main time constraint that we had is we had to be in East Durham, New York before noon on Saturday. He had some lumber milled to go under the build a little frame. All right, not even a little frame, a big frame. He'd had some 4x6 oak beams milled by a sawmill right there by Jimmy DiResta that he had arranged for him. And so we had 2 days to get to East, 2.5 days to get to East Durham, New York. And so, yeah, we stopped, got a hold of Charlie Ellis, Charles Ellis. I don't know. Charlie Ellis, Charlie Lionheart on Instagram.
Right.
And I believe
the one
it's
and only
Northwest Blade Works, which is Logan Gilliam. And those two guys both work for Coal Iron. And so we had breakfast with them Friday morning and, got to go to the Coal Iron shop and take a look around there and see what they got going, which is a lot of cool stuff. I'll be teaching a couple of tong classes there in March.
Oh, cool.
And so it was kind of good to get an idea of the school that they have there before I head up there. And yeah, it was back on the road to East Durham, New York, where we met up with the Duresta.
And how was that?
That was fun. It was maybe about as tiring as the drive.
Being with Jimmy.
Well, the fact that we show up there at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, you know, it was another like 12, 13 hours of driving that day.
Oh, God.
And they're sitting down to eat their turkey burgers and fries, him and his girlfriend. And we walk in, we have a couple of beers, you know, and we're telling him about just how exhausted we are and how much driving we've done. And about 11 o'clock, he's like, all right, let's go on the tour. So I'm thinking, you know, we're going to go see his shop that he's got here on the property and whatnot. And we did. And then he's like, all right, let's get in the truck and let's go check out the graveyard house, which he's doing a YouTube series on, which I hadn't seen any of, but that's okay. And it's this 1793 house. And also, Jimmy's house was built in 1790, which is just insane to me. We don't have old things. You know, Clarendon's I think, the third oldest town in the Texas Panhandle, and it's like mid-1800s.
Wow.
And so, going to houses that old and seeing a cemetery from like 1630 is just insane that there's stuff that old in the United States. But
yeah,
I mean, we got to see all of his stuff and it was really awesome. Got to go to all of his shops that night. Didn't get done until like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. And by that point, I was minorly dead.
I would have been number one at a certain time of the night if I'd been working for a long period of time. I start farting voraciously. So, like, that would have been the key to me. I just got to go. I got to go. Because it's just relentless. My body betrays me, and I just, like, I said that. I had my last metal shop I was in. My boss asked me to stay late, and I said, just to let you know, I've been here for 10 hours, and two more, you know, a couple more, and the farting starts. So, that means I'm tired. I want to go home.
That is an interesting side effect of being tired. I just get kind of delirious.
Right, right. And he's a lot. Jimmy is one of these guys. There's certain people who can do that whole, you know, stay up all night and work. My college roommate, Miles, he was the king of sleeping till noon, and then he could do an all-nighter, and I would be just barely hanging on the whole time. I can't do that. I gotta compartmentalize
sleep.
My time.
I like sleep, and the older I get, I don't need more sleep, but I have to get the sleep that I require.
Jimmy's surprisingly one of these guys who can go do that shit all night long.
I told Jack pulling up, you know, on their way up there, like, I don't know if you know about Jimmy, but I'd heard this from a couple of different people that he just is renowned for not sleeping. Like 2-3 hours a night is all he needs. And that's just, it's hard to hang after you've been going for as long as we had. But it was neat. It was real neat.
I think it's hard to hang even if you had a good night's sleep.
Yeah, it is. It is. And so from there, let's see, we met Rob Rojas, his sidekick there. He was a very nice guy. I mean, all the visit was very neat, very good. I was just, I was so tired I couldn't enjoy it as much as I'd like to.
I don't blame you.
And so, yeah, and then from there, it was on to Fishkill, New York to meet up with my friend Jeff Fader.
That's right. Well, I just kind of like kept everything very like flexible.
Yeah.
In terms of, I didn't know if you were going to come during the week or come during it, you know. So when you said you're going to be around for dinner on Saturday, I said, absolutely. And my wife came, which I'm really happy about.
I'm happy.
Well, she was originally going to, she's like, you guys want to just hang out. And then when you texted, he said, I hope your wife's going to come. And I'm like, I turned to her. We were walking the dogs. I said, you've been requested. Your presence has been requested. So she was psyched to be out there to meet you and Jack. And we came up and I was slightly disappointed that I couldn't find a better place for us to eat. But
I thought it was great. The service was a little unusual.
We got to talk about this restaurant. So I sent some messages to some people. We're trying to get a gauge on what you wanted to eat, because where you came, it wasn't a lot of great options, and I didn't know what kind of food you wanted. And you know, when I said we could do sushi, you guys were psyched for sushi. So there's a couple sushi places in that area, and one of them we'd been to before, and we got there, and there's a couple things that happened. Number one is our waiter, I originally thought was on drugs, and then my wife kind of quietly suggested that there might be more than just drugs. He might have been, you know, developmentally something. So she told me to keep my mouth shut. But then as dinner kind of kept going and the service was super slow, but the food was good and the conversation was great talking with you and Jack, that it didn't really matter that much. And then what I noticed was the guy seemed like he was out of it.
And he also kept leaving through the front door.
He also undercharged us by a mile.
Excellent.
I was not going to. How much do you think? So we ordered sushi. We ordered a pile of sushi for four people.
A pile of sushi.
Way more sushi than I expected. I think we got like two big deluxe platters, and we started grabbing all. We ordered, and then for some reason they were giving us 2-for-1 beers I've never heard of before in New York in my life.
Love it.
How much do you think that bill was?
I was going to get a couple hundred at least, maybe $250.
$140.
That's thievery. We stole it.
I mean, that's almost as good as your watch story is for New York.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Is that unbelievable?
No, I had no idea. No wonder you were so adamant. I got dinner, boys.
I was going to take the bill regardless, but when I saw the bill, I was just like, that little drug addict just stole a lot of food for us.
I don't think he was developmentally. I think he was just whacked out on drugs and just googly-eyed as he could be.
Well, when we left, my wife said he's on some good stuff.
Yeah.
And she made it very clear to me. She's like, yeah, that guy's totally on drugs. I was just like, well, if he's going to be my waiter, he can be on drugs. Because, I mean, if you told me that was going to be just pushing a $300 meal, I wouldn't have been surprised. Uh-uh. I was prepared for it. And when it was $140, I was just like, let's pay and get the fuck out of here before somebody with some responsibility makes a decision. I thought it was robbery. I mean, that we ordered so much food that it was like, I couldn't believe it.
Well, getting to meet up with y'all, I mean, for dinner, that was the highlight of my trip. Just as much as we've talked on the podcast and on the phone and, you know, on your deal, I put profound conversations, and I meant to put profound in quotes, but I didn't. I forgot. But that was just the highlight of the trip, and it just was so enjoyable.
Yeah, we had a great time. We really had a great time just meeting you and just having a conversation, and that was a lot of fun. And Jack was great. The one thing I will say, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Jack was having a really hard time with the chopsticks.
I didn't notice.
You did or you didn't?
I did not.
It was hilarious. Like, in my corner of my eye, he was dropping things into the soy sauce. And then, you know, as soon as it drops into the soy sauce, it starts to dissolve.
Apart. That happened
it's
to me
It's a fucking
once.
Dissolve. And I just could tell he was quietly trying to, like, you know, pull the sushi together. And I could just see it just like it's slipping out and then falling apart and then just dissolving into the soy sauce. And I was just like, poor Jack.
And, you know, at some point you just, I don't know, maybe you have to drink all the soy sauce and rice together and start from scratch in your soy sauce bowl.
It's like a soup. It's like a salt bath. I mean, that's the hardest. That's the worst part about sushi is like, if you don't get a good handle on it, you're like, it's a salt situation.
And also, if you let it sit in the soy sauce for a smidge too long, it just
inedible.
It's inedible, and you've left half your rice behind.
I feel like that's like, I mean, there's no other food I don't think where you have the potential to ruin every bite along the way.
By yourself,
along the way. It's like, this bite could be awesome, but the next bite could be a fucking disaster.
Never thought about it like that, but you're completely correct.
And there is no other food where the chef has composed. I mean, I don't know about the. I mean, they got a drug addict waiter. I'm not 100% sure about the chef. The sushi was dynamite.
Yes, it was.
But there's no other food where they compose every single bite. So if you have a roll of six, that's six bites. So the sushi is one of those things where, number one, it's the best food to go because you don't have to worry about it getting cold or hot or anything. And the other thing is every bite is composed. You're not adding to every bite. Like if you were eating like a plate of like turkey and mashed potatoes and corn, you're making your bite decisions. They don't let you make your bite decisions except for you can easily destroy it in one dip into the soy sauce. One drop in the soy sauce and you've ruined a bite.
And you've got six tries to get it wrong on a roll.
And the bigger the roll, the more potential for, and the bigger the roll and the tighter the slices. Like I think that we had like a soft shell crab one and it was like big, but they sliced it so thin there was it was like trying to hold a barrel by one stave or one ring.
Yep.
It was like, there's so much that could go wrong. And I think that's what Jack had the problem. I think that the rolls were a little bit too difficult to hang on to. And they just like, I mean, he was blowing it up in that soy sauce.
I would also like to state for the record that your hands did not look like you had finger blasted a pencil sharpener.
Well, I appreciate that. I noticed that
like you had washed them thoroughly.
I definitely washed them. I mean, I washed them. I just, you know, I think, I think that you're being very kind. And I believe that also, you know, you see it through the lens of somebody who works with their hands.
Uh-huh.
But the people who say I look like I've, you know, in that YouTube video where I look like I've gone to third base with a pencil sharpener, they're looking it through the lens of,
they've got little Cheeto fingers, baby soft, you know.
Yeah,
their Cheeto hands fingers. Are as soft as like a baby's feet.
Right, chicken, yeah, Cheeto fingers, they don't do shit with their fingers except for hit their, you know, don't worry about that. But thank you. So the next day, you got a hold of Cliff, and you had breakfast with Cliff?
Yeah, because Ariani had gotten a hold of me. He was like, Cliff's pissed that you didn't invite him for dinner. And in my defense, you know, people come to Texas, and they're like, hey, we're going to be in Texas. Can we come by? And I'm like, yeah, I guess. Where are you at? Oh, we're in Houston. Okay, well, that's 13 hours away.
Right.
People don't understand how big Texas is. And then I get to your part of the world. I don't realize how small it is.
Yeah. You know, the weird thing is where from where we were eating dinner, Cliff was probably 20 minutes away.
That's what he said.
It didn't even dawn on me. I didn't know your situation. It didn't even dawn on me to suggest it. And I felt like also if I suggested it, maybe that would be weird too.
Nah.
So like I didn't, but at the same time, it didn't even cross my mind.
Well, yeah. So he got a hold of me and he was 10 minutes away. And so we met up for breakfast, went to this little great little breakfast spot that his girlfriend, partner, whatever you want to call her, knows of, and had breakfast. And then we went to the museum called Dia Beacon.
Dia Beacon.
So I got a little bit of some culturing. Jack tried to force a little culture upon me, and I don't think he was very successful.
You didn't like it at all?
Oh, there was some stuff I liked.
Like the Richard Serra sculptures where you walk around? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, inside those are pretty neat. One I liked the best was the two pieces that are, I don't know, kind of ship-shaped, but off-kilter.
In that very tiny hallway?
Yeah.
That's the best one, yeah.
Yep, I liked that one. You know, and I didn't know who Richard Serra was, and they're these just like 2-inch thick, 10-foot tall 40-foot-long plates of steel that have these complex curves bent into them. I mean, it's neat. There's a lot of weight there.
The interesting thing, and here's the interesting thing about Richard Serra, is he's very hated by metal workers, because most metal workers, usually when they see his stuff, and it's usually outside, they'll usually say, "I could have done that," you know. And the crazy part about Richard Serra's stuff is the stuff that's outside is good, but the stuff inside is far more interesting. And that one piece that you said you liked the best is probably the sculpture that I like the best there too, because it's in this tiny hallway. So it's so compressed in there. It's like very almost like claustrophobic in that space. And that really is, that's what makes it interesting when the stuff is inside, because it's so massive.
Yeah.
He also had, people had have died making
this
work.
That's what I heard.
Somebody got squished in between the in the rollers.
And then apparently he had to start welding his sculptures together on the inside or somewhere, like connecting them. Oh, is that how they died? They got squished in the rollers bending those things?
I'm under the impression somebody slipped and they got squished.
I was under the impression that one of those things fell on somebody and squished them.
That might have happened too. I know that I was under the impression there's some squishing for sure. There's squishing happening.
It's interactive art.
Yeah, it's definitely it's interactive. But I'm glad you went there, because I really think that this, the interesting thing in general about art, I think art can be very approachable, and a lot of it has to do with how it's curated. And I think that the stuff in Diabeacon, like some of the stuff I couldn't give a shit about, but some of it is really so beautiful and huge and weird, and you just kind of like ask questions that I think it's a really great space. So I'm glad you went there. It was a good decision.
Jack was trying to get me to appreciate this guy there's some yarn hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And apparently that holds space, and you can really feel it holding space, but I don't believe that I ever felt it.
Did you see the welded Louise Bourgeois spiders?
I don't know if I saw that.
You would know if you saw it. She died, but she was a very famous sculptor. She made these giant steel spiders. Huge. Just monstrous. And they're pretty freakish.
No, I didn't
see that. They had them there, and then they had the John Chamberlain sculptures that are like crush cars and stuff like that. I like those.
There was some that was, you know, some piles of dirt.
Yeah, I know. And the piles of glass and all that.
And the piles of glass. But there was one that, like, you know, it was this, I don't know what you call a pyramid that's circular. What do you call that? A cone shape. Like an upside down cone.
I wish
made out of salt.
Oh, I wish I'd gone with you just to hear you say, what are you calling?
Well, you know, I actually kind of liked some of that. But, I asked if I could lick it. And they didn't go for that at all.
That's not my wife sometimes will look at sculpture and she says, I wonder if I can touch it and or lick it. So like that, you're not off base in your situation.
Yeah, but like, you know, I just didn't get most of it.
I don't blame you, but it's of all the museums in New York, I think that's the best in terms of like getting getting not only the art but the curation in the space. It's I definitely think it's good. All right. So you head up to Boston.
Yeah. So from there, we leave out and we make it to Georgetown. And we go to this guy's house where, you know, he's got this shop. And he's a weird dude. You know, just an... I don't know. His house was weird. It was kind of like half workshop, printing workshop, half shithole. That he lives in. You know, I asked if I can use the bathroom. He's like, yeah, it doesn't have a door. And I'm like, well, okay then. Clear out. But we get there, and this is the first time that I've seen this printing press. And it's big. It's the base of it's 75 inches wide and nearly 10 foot long.
Wow.
And it's top heavy, but you know, it's top heavy, but it's not like it's going to tip over top heavy. It's just all the weight on it is on the top. And we get to surveying, you know, how we're going to do this layout, what we're going to do. And the guy has got the wall cut out of his house so we can get it out. And then it's 15 feet from the wall to an abandoned railroad bed, like subsurface railroad bed. And so, you know, we kind of get the lay of the land, go to our Airbnb, which the Airbnb, that was a fiasco as well.
Go ahead.
So that we're pulling up and he gets a little lady with the Airbnb and she's like, well, you can't come stay at the Airbnb. I've got this other one that's 5 minutes further away, but it's in town. Is that going to be okay? And it was perfect because Jack had told me on the way up there, we may have a roommate at the Airbnb. And I'm like, I don't like that shit.
Right.
I'm not about that. So this sounds awesome. Like we get there, there's an oyster bar across the street. There's a ramen place, you know, 50 yards away. There's a liquor store literally next door. Starbucks around the corner. Like, it's just kind of the perfect spot for us to set up camp for this whole adventure.
Right.
So we go to the Airbnb. We get a decent night's sleep. We head back in the morning. And the whole plan is we're going to build a railroad track out of some extra wood that Jack had cut at that place that Jimmy had arranged. And then lay channel iron across it. Get it all dead nuts level. And he brought a transit to check all that with.
Jeez.
And then we've got to raise the trailer up off the ground to get it the same level as the railroad track. And so the first day is spent doing that, getting the railroad track set up, raising the trailer up like 2 foot in the back, maybe a foot in the front, and getting it all nice and level. And another thing I'd forgotten is Jimmy had lent us some equipment skates. And do you know what those are?
No.
I didn't know what they were until we got there, but they're little small heavy duty wheels that you can put under heavy equipment. And like you could probably roll an excavator around on one of these, probably 50,000 pounds.
Jesus.
Are well on a set of four of them, but they're just low to the ground, you know, maybe 4 inches tall that you can raise something up, set it down on, and then be able to roll it around instead of having to use pipes.
Right.
And while we're at Jimmy's, Jack keeps saying, we only need three, you know, it's a tripod. It's going to be super stable. That's all we need. And I'm still, and Jimmy, he had one set of three and he had one set of four. And I'm like, dude, let's take this set of four. You never know. Like, and sure enough, we got there. We needed four. But, so we got the railroad track built. We got the trailer raised up off the ground.
Question.
Yes.
Is that a curiosity? Now, when you raise the trailer, you're using a hydraulic jack.
Yeah. We took three jacks, three hydraulic jacks, and then do you know what a handyman jack is or a high lift?
Not really.
It's a metal post, and it's an old school jack, but it's a metal post with holes in it, and it's got an arm, and it'll raise stuff up like 4 feet, but they're notoriously unstable and notoriously dangerous. Like, they will knock people out and kill them.
Is that similar to what you would put, like, if you were dry docking a boat?
You know, I hadn't dry docked very many boats.
Me neither. But you see them on like posts, these like adjustable posts.
Maybe you see them on Jeeps a lot.
Okay.
And like there's a way you can rig them up and use them as a winch as well.
Okay.
But so we had those, and then we used two like big floor jacks, 3-ton floor jacks to raise the trailer up, the back of the trailer. And then we had, you know, stick cribbing underneath it, and we had to go one side and then the other and then raise it and keep doing that until we got it to the right height, and then move them inside. And we started cutting the frame out of these 4x6 oak beams to go underneath it. And so we wanted those underneath it to keep everything pretty well stable. And we did like a mortise and tendon joint, but not really. I don't know. It's a lap joint. I don't know what woodworking terms are.
Well, you cut like channels in so the wood could, so the something could accept something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. We made it so something could accept something else. and then bolted it together and then lifted the thing up. We did one side and we had the two cross members already attached. So we lifted one side up, slid it under one side of the printing press, lifted the other side up, dropped everything down on it, and it worked surprisingly
well.
How
did you lift the printing press?
Floor jacks and by bending pieces that probably should not have been bent on the printing press. There were not very many lifting points on it.
Yeah.
And there's all these pipe with all thread holding the frame together. And that's just the only places we had to lift. And so we did that. And we got a little bit better. We had some extra channel iron left over from building the railroad track. And so we put the channel iron under those bars to kind of spread out where we were lifting it a little bit better. And that seemed to help. And so that was the end of day. End of day one is we had all our wood pieces cut. Next day went, got it underneath it, and then stuck the skates underneath this thing. We had two in the front and one in the back. And as soon as we dropped it down, the one in the back, that big oak beam just started bowing incredibly. Like maybe 2-3 inches across an 8-foot span. Like this isn't gonna work. And the guy we were picking up the press from had another buddy that just kind of swung by and had a pretty good idea. And we put braces in between the oak beam and one of those metal pipes going across that we were bracing it from. And that kind of took a little bit of the give out of it. And we rolled it over to the door with lots of cussing and groaning and possibly herniated discs. And once we got it to the edge of the building, we dropped it down onto pipes, did the same thing, rolled it across to the trailer and put it back on skates, got it turned and got it tied down. I mean, it was a chore.
Was Jack, like, I would imagine if driving the whole all the way to this, I'm thinking in my mind, he's already kind of figured out what the plan is. Is he kind of going over with you what we're going to do? What you're going to do? Because you don't have a lot of time.
A little bit, but at the same time, him telling me what we're going to do didn't mean a whole lot until we got there because I hadn't seen anything. And then
right.
Once he got there, between the trailer building, the drive, the planning, I think he was a little bit out of bandwidth for the rest of maybe the fine tuning of the plan.
I believe that.
Which is where I kind of just took over a little bit on getting everything, you know, fine tuned and made sure everything worked good. And, you know, it was teamwork. I'm not saying he didn't do anything, but it just went, I don't know how he'd done it without me.
Yeah.
I don't know how I'd have done it without him. I mean,
it's such a massive, I mean, I saw you had it on your stories, and it was such a massive undertaking.
It was a massive undertaking with very little equipment. You know, another thing he had done is he'd mounted a winch on the front of this trailer, and the idea was we were going to be able to put a sling off to one side of the trailer and pull the whole thing out with the winch to where we weren't having to do much. But once we got the trailer lifted in the air, he realized, man, if we use this winch, we're going to pull the trailer over sideways off of the cribbing. And so we weren't able to use that until kind of the very end and when we were turning it on the trailer. Because it went onto the trailer perpendicular and then, you know, and so it was hanging off 10 feet, you know, 10 feet on an 8-foot trailer. We had to spin it and get it set it down in the middle. And so that was kind of it for that day. The next day, we just had a little bit of cleanup to do, which was great. Like, it was an easier day.
Were you just dead?
I was dog tired. I mean, we were both just beat. And like, kind of just the exhaustion of the trip, the moving, and all the thinking that we had to do with all of this. I'm not much of a thinker. I don't have to think that much.
It's a huge investment of time and energy to get this thing. I'm hoping he got a good deal on it.
He seems to think so. I mean, I know it nearly caused him to get a divorce.
That I believe. I mean, that trailer. I mean, when we went to pick you up for dinner, and you had the trailer. It was a massive trailer that he built. The amount of time and energy just to build the trailer.
Yeah.
Was it just a huge undertaking in and of itself?
That was a big deal. And then there's things like that Jack didn't think of that, you know, when we're on our way up there or before we leave, I'm like, you got brakes put on your trailer, right? And he's like, oh yeah, I got brakes. But he didn't have a brake controller inside his pickup and a brake. So he basically didn't have brakes on his trailer. You need this added little piece of equipment, which generally comes stock on a Super Duty pickup. His didn't have that, so his brakes didn't do anything. And carrying that much weight going that far, you've got to be able to have the brakes on your trailer doing the work for you.
Otherwise, you're done.
And so then the day before we went and did all the cleanup, I nearly forgot about this. He found a trailer shop that just happened to have an opening that morning if we got there right then, that they could install it for like $300, which is not bad.
No.
So we got that put on. We went and got all our... We also had to take all our bags and stuff from the Airbnb because the lady was like, I've got somebody coming to stay where you've been staying. The other Airbnb is now okay for you to stay in. Now here's the... I mean, this is the culmination of the whole trip. The last Airbnb night. So we've got all our rat killing done. We've got all our shit picked up. We're ready to go in the morning. Me to go to the airport. Him to go pick the trailer back up where he left it. We get to this Airbnb, and there's a woman there, and she's like 50s, foreign of some description. And I, you know, Jack goes to chatting with her because he's a talker. I go up and I sit on my bed and I'm looking at Instagram and stuff. And he comes up and he's like, so apparently this lady has some sort of like sound healing thing she does every Wednesday night. So there's going to be some weird racket coming from downstairs. And I'm like, fuck. So we have a roommate and it's a weirdo. So we go and we do a little shopping. I buy a couple of gifts for the kids. And Alex's birthday is Friday, so I picked her up a birthday present. We get some food. We take it back. We're done eating. She walks in, and she's like, well, I'm going to do my singing therapy bowl. You're more than welcome to stay. And I'm like, you know what? Why not?
Good for you.
Why not? I'm not laying down on the floor. I'm going to sit in this chair and drink beer, but I'll be here for it. So Jack also sits in a chair and she fires up her singing bowls, which is a whole lot louder than I expected. You know, when there's incense going, the lights are down low, shit ton of candles, and the majestic whine of the crystal singing bowl fires up, and it's just so much louder than I expected.
Is it like one of those bowls where you're going around it with like some other...
Yeah, you know, like some weird mallet, like and you bang on them ever so often, and you spin it around it some, and...
Oh, I hate this.
Yeah.
I hate this. Well, you have more tolerance than I would. I would have been like, oh, no. Oh, no, no, no.
Well,
oh, no,
I, no, no. I was not happy, but at the same time, you know, why not? My back hurts. Maybe it'll help. So,
my back hurts. Go start binging the balls. Yeah,
and so before long, you know, it's going on, maybe like 15, 20 minutes into it. Jack goes over, gets out of his chair, and he lays down on one of the yoga mats and immediately falls asleep and starts snoring. So then it becomes a battle of what can be louder, the singing bowls or Jack snoring.
So is the noise so relaxing that he just decides instead of going to bed, he just lies down and just gets right on the floor and goes right to bed?
I didn't think so. I'd rather listen to cats fight.
Me too.
I mean, it wasn't relaxing. It was loud, but and then he starts farting. and like farting like crazy. So then more incense is being burned. The volume is louder. More sage is being burnt.
Are you laughing at this point?
I'm dying. Well, I'm laughing on the inside, and I'm giving my family a play-by-play of this whole bunch of weirdness as everything was taking place. So, I mean, I was not. I sat it out, but I wasn't a very good audience.
I can imagine. He's just, I mean, his face is on the yoga mat, and then every so often.
Oh, yeah. And it was audible farts and also fragrant.
Oh, my God. How is that? Was there any, did she have customers there?
No. She just does this for herself.
Oh, my God. I can't think of anything less relaxing for her.
I can't think of anything less relaxing for me. And so the crystal singing, like the session ends, and Jack just wakes up like he hadn't been snoring and farting for half an hour.
Is she laughing at all, or is she into it?
Eyes closed and serious.
Oh,
except for whenever she's having to light more sage and whatnot.
Oh my God. That is hilarious.
I swear I looked over at one point and she was like vigorously flicking the burning sage towards him.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. And you're not laughing at this point?
I'm trying not to, but I'm also just a little, I'm just irritated that we're in this house with a weirdo like this. And you know, you can't, it's one thing going and staying with friends or family and you never fully comfortable in their house.
Right.
It's completely different when it's just an absolute stranger. And her house.
We have a Airbnb policy in our family.
I'll stay in an Airbnb, but I ain't sharing it.
Hillary is like, I don't want an Airbnb. She says, because if I clean enough in my own house, I don't want to clean someone else's house. I don't want to make the bed. When she's out, when we're staying somewhere, she doesn't want to have to feel compelled to lift a finger. And so like she has got a whole thing. We get opportunities to stay in Airbnbs and she's like, I cannot clean. I'm not here to clean. I don't want to clean a thing.
Don't make me
clean a thing.
I'm with her. The only time like I'm really okay with an Airbnb is like we take the kids down there to the beach in the summer. Down by Galveston, and that's the only place, you know, it's just these houses that are
of course
rental properties. I mean, that's what they're there for, and it's through Airbnb. But I feel like that's a little different.
That's a little different because, I mean, yeah, because it's an opportunity that you wouldn't have otherwise. Yeah.
Right? And there's so no, I mean, there aren't even hotels.
But I know that, like, we've had opportunities, like, when we go to Barcelona, and I said, you know, we get an Airbnb. She goes, nah, I don't want to be cleaning. I don't want to clean a Spanish apartment. Thank you very much. Not interested in cleaning a Spanish apartment. I think that was the expression. So, right. So you've farted. Jack has farted this poor woman up.
Uh-huh.
Does he feel real rested when he wakes up?
I mean, he was happy as a clam whenever he woke up. But he's a pretty positive guy, anyways.
Super positive.
And so did you
bust his balls?
Yes,
or?
I did.
What did you tell him?
You know, Jack. Like I felt my chakras getting aligned, and then you farted. And then you snored
it.
And just right back out of alignment.
Yeah, you ruined my travels to nirvana.
Yep. Well, and as I told my family in the beginning, like I'm pretty sure my chakras are in alignment right now, and I don't think they're meant to be that way.
Your chakras are not meant to be aligned.
No, they are not. No, nope. Chaotic chakras.
So at this point, I mean, I saw the truck unloaded, and all I could think of is I cannot believe Jack is gonna drive this whole fucking thing by himself back home.
And ideally, I would have flown up there, helped him get it loaded, and then ridden back with him. But Alex's birthday was Friday. I wasn't gonna miss that because we had literally just gotten done that same day. We had discussed her birthday plans, which also went awry, but I wasn't going to miss her birthday. And so he drove me to the airport in Boston, which, you know, we asked everybody, how long does it take to get to the airport? between a half an hour and an hour, depending on traffic. It took an hour and a half. And everybody was like, you need to be there 2 hours early to get through security. Like, it's going to take you a while. So I'm like, oh, shit. And I already hate flying. So we're going. It's taking an hour and a half. The last 2 miles to get to the airport took like 25 minutes. But we get there. I go into the wrong terminal. I have to run across to the other one. I know I'm going to be late. I get to security. There is one person in front of me.
That's good.
It's awesome. I mean, that's never happened. So, I mean, security was a breeze. I make it to, I get there plenty of time. I have a couple of Bloody Marys. I have to wait for the bar to open. But, yeah, I had a couple of airport salads and then onto the plane, onto Denver, and then onto home.
I hate the airport because I'm one of those people, I learned it from my father, to if you're not early, you're late.
Yeah.
And I know that for him, it was always like he would always want to be there 2 hours before. Yep. And part of me is like, I feel the same way. And especially when you're flying in anywhere in New York, it is totally like it can either take you half an hour or it could take you 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it is and when the trap, like you said, that last 2 miles, it can be so exhausting that I'll throw an extra hour on, and I would rather sit in the terminal than have to freak out. And then security, it could either be 5 minutes, or it could, you could get one person, or it could be a mile of people.
There's those people that are okay with showing up to the airport like half an hour before their flight. And I just, how do you live your life this way?
God bless my mother. I just saw her this past week, and it wasn't great. But she is, there's one thing about her that I respect, and it she has a real problem with authority. And I've come to the conclusion that she doesn't like to be told to be on time. She feels like being on time for things is submitting to authority to a certain degree. And I feel she's missed more trains and more planes than I'll ever have. I might be one of the main reasons why she and my father didn't get along. Because my father was like, if you're not 5 minutes early, you're late. Yeah. My mother was just like, don't fucking tell me what time I got to be there. So she would miss planes. She would miss trains. She would all that stuff. And it was like for me growing up with a father who was like, we're going to be at the airport 3 hours early. I remember times we're in a cab. And there's like they're gonna be boarding in 20 minutes, and we're still on a fucking fucking Van Wyck. Ah, I can't do it. Totally can't do it. I cannot do it. I hate flying in general.
I do too. And the older I get, the worse it is. And it's like I've got this fear of flying, and it's the landing. And I know it's irrational, but I'm strapped in a metal tube aimed at the ground, hauling ass. And at the critical moment, the pilot can't see the ground because the nose of the plane is up. I don't like that. I hate it.
I was just about to say the same thing. The older I get, the worse flying I get.
Uh-huh.
And the crazy part is, for me, now my kid is in California. I don't know what the story is, but like the last... 100 miles between, or there's a section by the time you get to Los Angeles that they're preparing you for, saying that the turbulence is going to be really bad. Like, I've gone out twice, and both times the pilot prepares us in the beginning of you're talking about a 6 hour flight. They're telling us in the beginning how bad it's going to be. And it's like, it's so bad.
I might start.
The turbulence is so bad.
Off an hour early and drive that last. It might take 4 hours to drive it, but might rather do that.
It is so bad. It is so bad that I was just like, I'm white knuckling it. I'm holding the grips of the goddamn the hand the seat rests, and I'm a miserable wreck. And when they land, you have a group of people. I don't know what the fuck is going on, but people clap. Have you ever been on a plane where people clap?
Yeah, no, I hate it.
They're supposed to land. The pilot's supposed to land the plane. He's doing his job. He's supposed to land the plane carefully. There's no, there, you shouldn't be clapping. He's doing his job. We're supposed to be alive at the end.
Nobody
of this.
Claps whenever I finish a hammer.
Nobody claps when I drive the car, when I drive my family somewhere. Nobody claps when I come into the parking and everything's fine.
Yeah, it's just awful. The whole experience is just a miserable thing. And, you know, you're just wadded in this uncomfortable seat with some fat fucker son of a gun next to you. Sorry, Mom. you know, hogging the armrest. And, oh, I'll say this. I did dodge a bullet on my flight from Boston to Denver. I sat down, and there's a woman walking around with a screaming baby, and she's going to be sitting next to me. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be awful. And then, sure enough, another lady and her husband come on the plane with twins. One of them sits on the other side of me, and the man is directly behind me with this screaming baby. And I'm like, this can't, like, this is worst case scenario for a plane. Like, just go ahead and crash.
I have been on more planes, and the plane flights to Europe, this is like a real humble brag, but I've been sat next to crying babies so many times. It is horrible.
Oh.
Horrible.
So the male stewardess, whatever you call, airline attendant?
Flight attendant.
The dude comes up and he's like, hey, there's an open seat back here. I'm already in the back of the plane, but I was like six, seven rows up from the very back. He's like, there's two open seats on the whole plane. They're both right by the bathroom. Do you want that? And it's an aisle seat. And I'm like, yes. Yes, brother. I want it. And so they moved me back there and then gave me free beer for the flight.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Free beer for the, how many beers did you get for free?
I drank three.
So why did they give you free beers?
I don't know. I guess because I was,
airline
I
was
guess
this?
I was nice enough to move to give the people with babies extra room.
Oh my
God. I don't know.
That's unbelievable. I've never gotten free shit on a plane.
I have had a lot of free beer on a plane, and I think the airline attendants realize this guy is kind of barely keeping it together. He obviously doesn't like flying, and he's having a hard time. Let's give him a little bit of help.
See, I would think it's the opposite. I would think that you look with the beard and the mustache and your whole thing and your whole kind of ethos. I think that probably people would maybe consider you maybe potentially to be a problem, but then the fact that it is you're so polite and nice and kind, I think maybe that they're pleasantly surprised. And then that you're not a problem, and that maybe they're like so overwhelmed by the fact that you're not a problem that they're going to take care of you.
Maybe so. Maybe so.
I think I
might be more of a problem if I was sober on an airplane, though.
Really?
Oh, I don't cope well with it.
I get very dehydrated on a plane, so I don't like drinking on a plane.
Oh, I do.
And I'm also hoping to fall asleep.
I can't sleep.
I have to sleep on the plane, and I also know that I'm going to go to the bathroom a few times. So, like, the more I have to drink, the more I'm potentially going to go to the bathroom, and that's problematic. And what do you choose? Do you do aisle or you window?
Oh, aisle all the way.
Aisle is important, except for the fact that you're always at the mercy of other people who have to go to the bathroom.
And, I'm okay with that, but I'm not disturbing them by me getting up and going to the bathroom.
Right. Exactly. I was actually, when we were flying back, I was flying back I don't remember where I was, but I definitely remember, maybe I was coming back from California, and I was with, the people around me were relatively rude. Like I was very noticing that, here's the thing that I don't like. I do have some weird airport news, by the way, that we were going to segue into. But this is something that I wanted to bring up. So if you're flying across country in a long flight, you know, most of the planes now have, like, movies.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Usually the movies aren't very good. However, if you don't watch a lot of movies, you get to see movies that you wouldn't normally see, and maybe there's some movies in there that are some guilty pleasures that you wouldn't rent or buy or whatever, but the fact that they're there and you're on this plane, you can be frivolous with the movie selections, wouldn't you say?
You got nothing else to do. You can watch The Fifth Element 3 times.
Well, the problem is on the flights I've been going on, I think it's JetBlue, whatever movie you press, it'll say, do you feel, is this going to be a movie that's going to offend other people next to you? Have you seen that notice?
I have.
It doesn't say it like that.
And it's just, I don't care.
Well, see, my opinion is why would you have it on the fucking plane?
Exactly.
If I can't watch this without worrying about what the person next to me is going to play. So in my mind, this is the second plane, I'm just like, are you sure? Like, I was on a plane when I took one of the plane flights to California. I was coming back, and I wanted to watch a violent movie, which I don't normally watch. And then I felt guilty because I was sitting next to this little girl, and I was like, well, I can't do that. And then I didn't watch what I wanted to watch. I ended up watching Moneyball. Moneyball is a banger. I don't know if you've seen Moneyball.
I have. Great movie.
God damn, that's a movie to revisit. Yep. Moneyball is a great movie. So I'm on the plane. And it's a long flight, and I'm looking through, and I cannot find a lot of movies to watch. So I knew I got to bank 3. I need 3 that I can, like, hold my attention, yep. Right? So there's Jiro Jima's Sushi. That's a banger. Yep, I can watch that over and over again. That one is one of those ones that you can goo all the time. And then there's another one. It was a Guy Ritchie movie with I don't know who it was. Henry Golden is in there, who's a customer of mine. So it was, I think it was like something about, it was a World War II movie, and these guys are like ungentlemanly warfare, something, something, something.
Is it The Gentlemen are Inglourious Basterds?
Not Inglourious Basterds, but it's like the same concept. All right. And I think it's like the gentleman, ungentlemanly warfare, something, a really violent show, all right? So I'm thinking to myself, I should be able to watch this because my customer is in this movie, and I feel as though that's good enough for me.
Uh-huh.
I turn it on, and it's all about this like group of, you know, these terrible murderers who go and kill Nazis. Well, the people next to me are from Israel because I can hear them speaking in Hebrew. I see them reading in Hebrew, and then all of a sudden I think, maybe they won't notice the movie. I'm watching the movie. There's swastikas all over the place, and then as I, out of the corner of my eye, I see one of the women just looking up and seeing these swastikas, and I thought, am I possibly the worst Jewish person in the world? And
no,
I'm thinking to myself,
they're killing Nazis.
And I'm thinking to myself, what do I say? Do I have to say something? And then I'm like, maybe it'll be just the swastikas for 5 minutes because they're killing Nazis. And then I'm thinking to myself, I've passed on movies before because of this, and I want to see this movie because I want to see my customer, Henry Golding. I want to see Snake Eyes. He was Snake Eyes in G.I. Joe. I want to see what he has to offer. And then there's more swastikas. And then there's one of the guys is famous for stabbing people to death. And then they're doing all this. It's incredibly violent. And every so often, and the woman next to me is obviously she's a teacher. I kind of like glanced over, and she's like a professor at a college. But she and her, whoever she's with, they're speaking Hebrew. And I'm thinking to myself, do I have to tell them I'm Jewish and it's okay? And then, but then again, I don't speak Hebrew. Maybe I'm not Jewish enough for them. I don't speak Hebrew. Where do I go with this? And like, I'm starting to get irritated. I'm thinking to myself, what the fuck am I to do? I'm sorry if your mom's listening to this.
And you can't enjoy
your
movie at all because you're overthinking everything.
I can't enjoy the movie at all, and I turn it off. And then I think to myself, and then I try. And then you know what I did end up doing? I played solitaire for 2 hours.
Oh.
And then I linked, because there wasn't anything else I could watch. There was nothing I was interested in.
That's my game of choice as well, but just 2 hours of solitaire is too much solitaire.
Well, I hooked into the Wi-Fi, and I was able to listen to the last Mets playoff game. And I listened to the Mets playoff game, and I played solitaire. I've never played 2 hours of solitaire at all. And I felt as though, and I played the Las Vegas version where it's for money. And then I started assuming that the woman next to me thought I was a degenerate gambler. And then I was just like, get me off this goddamn plane. Get me off this goddamn plane. So in my mind, I'm thinking, she's thinking, I'm sitting next to a white supremacist. I'm sitting next to a neo-Nazi degenerate gambler.
Right.
Meanwhile, I'm like, I hate myself, and I'm fucking can't even watch the Mets. I'm listening to the Mets.
You're mixed religions. You need to start packing around a Star of David necklace. Just have it, you know, like on your keychain, and then also a cross. Just
yeah, but I'm not good enough. I don't know enough about either that it would make a difference.
Fair enough.
Like. You know, so it's just like it's it would be like it's just not enough that like I can't defend any of it. So she's sitting, you know. So with the exception, so I have a couple story. I have a story here that I had to bring up because this whole air flight thing is this is a great one, and I want to know your opinion on an airline passengers could be removed from flights for going barefoot.
Good.
Etiquette experts weigh in. You likely want to be cozy on your flight for hours at a time, but there are some airlines that have restrictions on how far travelers can go to increase their comfort. Social media users on TikTok have shared experiences of flying with fellow passengers who have taken their socks off on commercial flights. Many popular airlines could even remove a passenger from a flight if the person goes against the no barefoot policy. American Airlines carefully details what's required of a passenger in its conditions of carriage contract. In an effort to create a safe environment for all aboard, the airlines require everyone to dress appropriately, which means bare feet or offensive clothing aren't allowed. Rule number 21 on United Airlines carriage of contract is refusal of transport, which mentions a variety of reasons that someone may be denied entry on a plane or possibly removed. One of the variables listed includes passengers who are barefoot, not properly clothed, or whose clothing is lewd, obscene, or offensive. Some airlines also allow those of a certain age to go barefoot, while flying. For the comfort and safety of those on the carrier, Southwest Airlines notes that its staff may remove people if they're barefoot and above the age of 5 or without a disability that requires them to be barefoot. JetBlue is another airline that abides by the same age rule, according to the carriage contract. While this rule seems to be popular among U.S.-based airlines, not all foreign airlines have this ban listed on conduct contracts. Air Canada, Air France, even British Air, to name a few, do not have any rules listed in the airline's contract of carriage that allows for the removal of passengers to be barefoot.
I love this.
When an airline does implement a no barefoot policy, enforcing it is reportedly up to the flight attendant. Each contract used the word may be required, meaning that it's not hard or fast rule that the passengers must follow. Even though wearing socks is not necessarily required, there are some fair reasons to keep your toes tucked away while on board. Jacqueline Whitmore, an etiquette expert, based in Florida, says it's best to keep your feet covered in most capacities.
Taking off my boots or shoes is the very last thing I do before I go get ready for bed. Like I have got, even whenever Alex and I are sitting around watching TV in the evening, I have shoes on in case I got to go outside. The idea of taking my shoes and socks off on an airplane is just repulsive.
I have been on a plane where I've seen someone take their shoes and socks off.
The guy on that flight where I was getting free beer took his shoes off, but he left his socks on.
I have definitely taken my shoes off and left my socks on. However, my feet stay way under. Actually, what I'll do is, like on a flight where I try to get some... Well, number one is I try to wear the shoes that are the most comfortable that I can feel comfortable. Like I have some sneakers that are almost like socks in general. So I'll make sure I have those on. And if I do take my shoes off, it's got to be like, I got to be at my wit's end. And then what I'll do is I'll take my shoes off. I'll push them in front of me under the seat. And then I'll keep my feet on top of the shoes.
That doesn't bother me. I mean, that's, you're doing the best you can to not bother other people by being unshod.
Right.
Have you seen the pictures of people like our videos? They'll be on an airplane and like there's a foot beside their head.
Yes.
I would lose it. One of the two of us is getting removed from the plane. Either your foot or me.
I hate humanity in general, but like people's comfort around strangers annoys me more than anything else. When you're so comfortable, like the people in the sitting next to me were eating very, very foul-smelling food.
Oh, I wouldn't do that.
I'm not even talking about on this past trip, but I've been on trips where people are, like, wolfing down some, like, hairy shit. And part of me is just like, God damn, I don't want to be smelling this on the whole trip.
It's just so rude.
Air travel now. Actually, JetBlue has their first class. They give you like your own little capsule. Like you're
strapped in a tube inside a tube.
No, it's like you have your own area. Like you have, it's not just you're not sitting next to someone. A cubicle. You have your own little cubicle. At some point, we're going to need to have that because we should be entitled to having our own personal space. Air travel is so expensive that it's like...
And it's so uncomfortable.
It's so uncomfortable. You know what the other thing is? The fact that people get mad if you put your seat back.
I don't generally recline my seat. But I don't think I'd be mad if somebody did. And I've had people do it in front of me, and it's just, all right, they can do that.
I definitely, when I put the seat back, I'm crossing my fingers that someone doesn't complain. Because I once had a guy, I put my seat back, the guy taps my arm, he says, I'm trying to eat. And I'm looking like, well, but it's not my, you should talk to the airline.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with the goddamn movie. It's like, you shouldn't. You know, and they even said, I was on one flight where this man and woman were fighting. The woman was in the back, the guy was in the front. The woman would push her seat back, and the guy would, apparently, you can just push the seat back behind it, and you can reverse the pushing of the button. You can fucking put, so this woman's pushing her seat back, the guy's pushing it forward, pushing a seat back, pushing it forward. They had to get the flight attendant involved, and the guy was just like, I am eating. I don't want this woman's goddamn seat in my face. And all I can think of is, this shouldn't be between them. This should be the guy who's inconvenienced in the airline because they allow them to do it. If you can put your seat back, You should be able to put your seat back.
If you don't want,
you have the right to put the seat back. There's no, without question. It's just like, how can you, if they allow me to put their seat back and the pilot says, now you can put your seat back, and you put your seat back, everyone's telling you can put your seat back except for the guy behind you.
You know, the whole flying deal too, though, I mean, it's just gotten to be, it's at one point it was a luxury. You know, people get dressed up and wear suits to go on a flight.
Yeah.
And now they've just, you're wadded in like sardines. You've got to smell the person's raunchy food next to you. You've got to see their bare feet on the other side of you.
Crying babies.
Like, how shitty can we make this experience and still expect people to pay for it?
This is your pilot speaking. In about 2 hours, we're going to have the worst turbulence you've ever felt in your life. Just be prepared. I'm giving you 3 hours to get yourself mentally prepared for the fact that this turbulence is going to be so bad.
The next 3 hours until the turbulence, we'll be playing crystal singing bowls to help soothe your
and we're going to like, we're going to, and it's going to be so bad, we're going to shake your fucking brains apart, and you're going to be scared for your life, and we're not going to tell you that as pilots, we understand how to fly through turbulence. We're just going to like let you think that, you know, we're at the mercy of turbulence. Because that's the other thing. Like, there's some, the worst turbulence for me is, it's not just the shaking, but it's when it goes up and then comes down.
Oh, yeah, like, that is by far the worst.
And you think to yourself, how does the pilot keep the plane going forward?
How does the plane not come apart?
And you see the wings. You see the wings, you know, like flapping because they're long, you know, like they're moving. Like even when you're on the ground and then you're sitting by the wing and you look out the window, the wing is shaking. Why is the wing shaking?
See,
is there so much flex?
I don't think most people even think about that stuff, but that is the type of thing I think of on a flight. Like, I don't think that wing should be flexing like that. That doesn't look good to me. I'm pretty sure we're going down.
It's a lot of flex.
Yeah.
And all those rivets, they're all really good. And there's, why is there tape on that wing? What's that tape for? Now, that's a thing. They have, like, tape.
Yeah, they do. Oh, flying is just, it's a horrible experience.
I hate it. I hate it. I think that I would probably, if I was drunk, I think I would hate it more. But I think that if I was, like, if I had some, like, edibles or something like that.
No, you do horrible on, I know about you. You do horrible on edibles. But you can't get drunk. Like, you got to just, 2-3 beers. You just got to have a light buzz.
But then there's a very good chance I might say something that just comes out wrong. That I just don't want it to be. Or make a noise that I wouldn't normally make.
These people are eating their curry and with their shoes off. What are they going to say?
Oh, my God. With their crying baby and the curry.
Yeah. I got to say that I got home Thursday night. Alex and the kids picked me up from the airport. Everybody was thrilled to see each other. We come home. We're hanging out. Kids go to bed. About 9:30, I'm getting ready to get in bed, and I hear a splash from Pinecone's room. And she has puked all over her floor.
Oh, no.
And she'd been fighting. You know, she's a kid. Things go through school. She's been fighting off this stomach bug all week. She'd already been sent home from school on Tuesday for having a fever. Went back Wednesday. And Thursday. No, she wasn't. She got sent home Tuesday, had to stay home Thursday, went back Thursday, threw up that night. So that Friday morning, I'm like, you know, happy birthday, woman. I'll keep the kids kind of normal. I don't feel like doing much anyways today, but we decided probably better go ahead and take her to the doctor, have her checked out since it's a Friday, and if it gets worse, it's going to be a pain. So as I'm sitting in the doctor's office with her in the room, they'd done the swabs for strep and COVID and all that. Alex calls me. The Comanche's running a fever. You need to come get him.
Oh, no.
Like, well, I can't. And luckily, you know, it's like 2 minutes from the school to the little family clinic here in Clarendon. And so that's just nearly the end of all the odyssey that I've been on, except for Jack. He got back a day sooner than he expected. He had to drive 60 miles an hour to get home. I help him back his trailer in. I meet him in town, help him get his trailer backed into his shop, get it unhooked. Yesterday he calls me and he's like, I've lost the keys to the trailer. Like all the locks with all our tools and one of these job boxes in the back of that trailer and all that. He's like, I can't find them. And so I'm like, all right, well, let's retrace your steps to the house, you know, which is like 15 miles, maybe longer than that. But we're driving, you know, 25, 30 miles an hour all the way out to his house. And I walk into his house, and I just check his vest pocket, and there are the keys. But he was just a damn road founder. He didn't remember putting them in his pocket.
You know what? All's well that ends well.
All's well that ends well.
All's well that ends well. Guys, he's back. Ben Snoor, it was so great to meet you.
You bet.
We had such a great time. Hillary, the only thing she asked me was, did he really name his children Pinecone and Comanches? I had to explain that to her. I said I wasn't going to explain it while you were telling the stories. But she asked me afterwards. I was just like, yeah, no, that's just the nicknames. Yeah. This is of his kids. But other than that, you were terrific. It was great to meet you. It was great. I'm glad I got to meet Jack. It was a real blast.
Well, I'm honored that I got a couple of laughs out of Hillary. Apparently, that doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, you got some big ones out of her, which was you hit some good ones. You hit some. I don't remember what we were talking about, diarrhea or something like that. Diarrhea in a car,
as we
I think
do.
Something like that. And yeah, you definitely knocked one out. So she definitely got a good one out of her. So congratulations. It's always a pleasure having you here. We didn't get to any weird news, so I got a pile of it for next time. And thanks again.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
All right, guys. We are very excited. So this is Friday. If you're listening, if you're a Knife Talk listener, join us on Saturday The 16th, the Damasteel Invitational. It's going to be live, so you can go to Damasteel, and then you can get you can watch the Knife Talk guys. And then I will have next week, I will have Ben Camone on, who's going to be at that Damasteel Invitational. So we're going to have him. We're going to fool around. But, guys, go follow, and all the show notes will be all the links to, you can buy Ben's hammers at Wellshod. I got the two great hats. I wore the hats from Wellshod. There are no Farrier's hats in all of New York, and I'm wearing two of them. We got go to Wellshod to get Ben's hammers. Go follow him on Instagram, Ben Snurr on Instagram. And we'll see you next week. Ben, thank you so much. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Big shout out to you for making it through the hectic holiday season. This new year, get clean, quality, pregnancy nutrient support off your to-do list, including Ritual's best-selling essential prenatal multivitamin, designed with 12 traceable key ingredients to support a healthy pregnancy. With big changes coming up, take the small steps now and start today with 30% off a three-month supply at ritual.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.